This webcast is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Steinway & Sons is a proud sponsor of Between the Keys, featuring Jed Distler. More information about Steinway & Sons, makers of handcrafted pianos since 1853, is available at www.steinway.com. Welcome again to Between the Keys. This is Jed Distler, artist in residence for the Classical Network. The music that you are hearing in the background comes from one of the most iconic piano recordings ever made. It's the aria from Johann Sebastian Bach's Goldberg Variations, performed by the 22-year-old Glenn Gould back in 1955. This recording not only brought the Goldberg Variations to new generations of music lovers, but it also helped to establish Glenn Gould's reputation as one of the most fascinating, unusual, and utterly original pianists of his era. I think it's kind of remarkable how Glenn Gould still has such a strong hold on classical music listeners 35 years after his death in 1982. More books have been written about Glenn Gould than any other pianist, I believe. He's been the subject of numerous documentaries and tributes and week-long symposiums. Glenn Gould's recordings have been remastered and reissued too many times to count. Gould would have turned 85 on September 25th, 2017, and I've decided to devote this episode to Gould's stimulating and sometimes controversial artistry. When you hear certain of Glenn Gould's performances for the first time, the effect is almost like stepping into a cold shower. First you're startled and you don't quite settle in, yet still you emerge refreshed. A case in point, I think, is the first movement from Beethoven's C minor sonata, opus 13, the Pathetique. And let's listen to how Glenn Gould plays this first movement of the Pathetique.
Thank you.
Wow, what an exciting performance. That was Glenn Gould playing the first movement from Beethoven's Pathetique Sonata in C minor, opus 13. You know, the tempo was unusually fast, but what's fantastic is that Gould's fingers are in complete control. The rhythm is so centered. There are no hesitations, no vagaries. Everything is as clear as an X-ray. Although Glenn Gould had a very Catholic repertoire, he was unusual in that during his adult career, he made a point of largely avoiding the Romantic era composers responsible for much of the piano repertoire's most frequently performed masterworks. For instance, he largely steered clear of Schubert, Schumann, Chopin, and Liszt, and forget the French and Spanish Impressionists, and forget Rachmaninoff. Gould did make a beautiful recording in 1960 of Brahms' intermezzos, and in this performance of the opus 116 number 4 intermezzo, you get a pretty good glimpse of Gould's romantic side. He plays with a lot of flexibility, and he doesn't hesitate to bring out the music's contrapuntal layers. It's quite a lovely performance. Glenn Gould playing Brahms. Thank you. That was Glenn Gould playing the intermezzo in E major, opus 116, number 4, by Johannes Brahms. In 1964, when he was 31, Glenn Gould decided not to give live performances anymore, and from then on, he devoted his energies to broadcasting and recording. It was a decision that, needless to say, proved quite controversial at the time. After all, why would a successful concert pianist making a lot of money and playing all over the world walk away from the kind of career that most pianists would do anything to have? Yet Gould had valid reasons for doing so. In fact, he was as articulate, insightful, charismatic, and provocative a person away from the piano as he was making music. So here's an excerpt from a 1968 interview with producer John McClure, where Glenn Gould talks about the dangers of repeating certain repertoire over and over again in live performance situations.
I went to Russia about a decade ago, and that was my first tour abroad. Yes, it is that now.
Decade.
10, 11 years ago. And that was my first tour abroad, and at that time I was very fond, as most concert performers are, of playing the same safe set of secure repertoire pieces. One of my favorite pieces in those days was the fifth partita of Bach, you know, the doo-doo-doo-dee, bum bum bum, the nice G major one. It was absolutely my favorite Bach partita at that time, maybe still. So favorite, in fact, that I played it on virtually every program. When I would first play in Leningrad, that would be the feature work of the first half of the program, ditto in Moscow, etc. If it was not on a program, it might even turn up, partially at any rate, as an encore. Mm. And when I came back from that tour, I decided to record it, and it was, I swear, the worst Bach recording that I've ever made. It was also the most pianistic. It was perhaps the one that the connoisseur of the piano would like best. It's the one that I like least because it's least Bach. It's least me, vis-a-vis Bach, in any case. It's full of all sorts of dynamic hang-ups. It's full of crescendi and diminuendi that have no part in the structure and the skeleton of that music, and defy one to portray the skeleton adequately.
A crude bad habits, is that
crude one? Bad habits, precisely, and the reason that they got into it was that I had to play it in very large halls, which weren't set up with Bach in mind, certainly, and to try to project it to that man up there in the top balcony. And as I did that, I gradually picked up all kinds of what I suppose Sir Tyrone Guthrie would call bits of business, you know, and I added this hairpin and that hairpin to a phrase that didn't demand it, didn't need it, and that ultimately destroyed the fabric of the music.
What kind of thing? Can you illustrate it?
Well, let me try by playing as I recall. I played that recording 10 or 11 years ago. Perhaps I'm not doing it quite adequately. Perhaps I'm not remembering exactly, and perhaps I'm exaggerating just a bit. Here's a bit of the Allemande. I'm quite sure that if I'd not managed to mess up my interpretation of that piece by giving so many public performances of it, I might have played it with some regard for the structure of the music, maybe something like this.
Glenn Gould, in conversation with John McClure, speaking about the Allemande from Bach's Partita No. 5. Let's hear a studio recording that Gould made of this piece in 1954 for the CBC. And this is actually a recording that Gould himself preferred over his more familiar Columbia remake. Let's listen. Music of Bach, the Allemande from the Partita No. 5 in G major, pianist Glenn Gould. That was a 1954 CBC studio recording. Very few people recorded music by the English Tudor composers William Byrd and Orlando Gibbons on the modern concert grand before Glenn Gould did so for one of his most delightful releases. I think he brings a lot of life, a lot of textural variety, and humor to this performance of William Byrd's Sixth Pavane and Galliard.
Thank you.
That was Glenn Gould at the piano with music by William Byrd, his sixth Pavane and Galliard. This is Jed Distler, artist in residence for the Classical Network, and we are celebrating what would have been Glenn Gould's 85th birthday on September 25th, 2017, while October 4th, 2017 marks the 35th anniversary of Gould's untimely death at the early age of 50. In 1971, Gould made what I believe were the first commercial recordings of several piano works by Georges Bizet, who is the composer best known for his opera Carmen and the Symphony in C. But very few people knew that Bizet had written any piano music before Gould recorded it. This is the Premier Nocturne in F major, music by Bizet, Glenn Gould at the piano.
Thank you.
a very seldom heard piano piece by Georges Bizet, his premier nocturne with pianist Glenn Gould. One of Gould's most famous, or perhaps infamous, quotations is that the only excuse to record something that's been recorded many times before is to do it differently. Although, of course, Gould would go on to say that there would have to be a valid musical reason for doing so. Gould seldom recorded a piece of music more than once, and here is a case where he really went out of his way to be different when he re-recorded this work. Let's take the first movement of Mozart's C major sonata, Kürschel 330, in Gould's 1958 recording. This is a very contained, slightly deliberate performance, as you'll hear in the beginning. Now, listen to what happens when Gould re-records this music in 1970. Well, obviously it's faster, punched out, and it's almost contemptuous, I think. After all, Gould did not harbor positive feelings about Mozart, and I think this is a case where this was a very willful, deliberate example of the only reason to record something again is to do it differently. At the same time, when Glenn Gould revisited the Goldberg variations in 1981, he had truly rethought the music from every angle, and in this recorded interview with Tim Page, you will get a sense of what Gould was aiming for, coming back to record the Goldberg Variations 25 years after he first recorded it.
Well, you mentioned Variation 15, mm-hmm. and of course, it's only one of three variations in the minor key, in G minor.
That's right.
There's another of that trio, number 25, that I'd like to talk about for just a moment. Mm-hmm. I guess in many ways it's the most famous, well certainly the longest of all
Absolutely.
The variations.
It's also the most talked about among musicians, I think.
Well, with good reason. I mean, what an extraordinary chromatic texture.
Yeah, I don't think there's been a richer load of enharmonic relationships any place between Gesualdo and Wagner.
Well, I remember you used it in your soundtrack for the film Slaughterhouse-Five.
That's right, and to accompany, of all things, the burning of Dresden.
Indeed. Well, I want to play just a few bars of this variation in both versions.
We really have to hear the early one, eh?
Oh, I think we must. The contrast is, shall we say, striking.
That it is.
Now, this is the 1955 version.
Which sounds remarkably like a Chopin nocturne, doesn't it?
No. I think on its own terms, though, Glenn, that this is really lovely playing.
Well, yeah, it's okay, I guess, but there's a lot of piano playing going on there, and I mean that as the most disparaging comment possible. You know, the line is being pulled every which way. There are cute little dynamic dips and tempo shifts, like that one, things that pass for expressive fervor in your average conservatory, I guess.
Do you really despise this version?
No, I don't despise it. I recognize, you know, that it's very well done of its kind. I guess I just don't happen to like its kind very much anymore. And I also recognize, to be fair, that many people will probably prefer this early version, that many people may find the new one rather stark and spare emotionally. But this variation, number 25, represents everything that I mistrust in the early version that I made of the Goldberg. It wears its heart in its sleeve. It seems to say, please take note, this is tragedy. You know, it doesn't have the dignity to bear its suffering with a hint of quiet resignation.
And the new version does.
Well, I'm prejudiced, but I think it does, yeah.
Well, we're approaching a cadence, so why don't we use that excuse to switch over to the new version?
It couldn't come too soon for me.
Thank you.
Glenn Gould playing the 25th variation from Bach's Goldberg Variations. That was from a recorded interview with Tim Page that took place only about a month before Gould died. Apparently, Gould had scripted this entire interview prior to its recording, and that Tim Page was actually playing himself, like a hired actor, so to speak. One of my favorite of Glenn Gould's recordings is of Paul Hindemith's Third Piano Sonata. Hindemith's contrapuntal rigor suited Gould's piano style perfectly, I think, and this performance of the second movement showcases both Gould's genius for projecting contrapuntal textures and his ability to keep everything absolutely clear at the fastest tempos possible. The second movement of the Third Piano Sonata by Paul Hindemith, Glenn Gould at the piano. Gould loved to play guessing games, and he would often play a snippet of a composition on the piano for friends or co-workers, and he'd ask them to guess the composer. So when Gould came to New York in 1981 to re-record the Goldberg Variations, his assistant, Ray Roberts, first met with a production team, and he gave them advance warning that Gould might play Guess the Composer at the piano. So Ray Roberts said something to the effect of, okay, now listen, if Gould plays something that sounds contemporary but it's nice and pretty, you say, that's Hindemith. And if he plays something that sounds contemporary, but it's not so pretty, then you say Ernst Krennic. I imagine that probably by guessing the right answers, you would gain Gould's confidence. But in fairness, I really like Ernst Krennic's music. And like many piano mavens, I first learned of his Third Piano Sonata through the Glenn Gould studio recording. I want to use the scherzo from this sonata to demonstrate how audiences probably inspired Gould more than he would have cared to admit. Let's listen first to the scherzo of the Krennic Third Sonata from Gould's studio recording right now. Thank you. The Scherzo from Ernst Krenek's Third Piano Sonata. That was Glenn Gould in a 1958 studio recording. But now let's hear the same music and the same pianist a year early in 1957 live in Leningrad. What did you think? How do you think these two performances compared? I think that Gould's live performance of the Scherzo of Ernst Krenek's Third Sonata is a little faster, maybe more spontaneous, and it takes wing in a way that the studio recording doesn't quite capture. But the studio recording is excellent in itself, and of course the sound quality is much better. I like both, actually. Now I'm going to play a little bit of the 13th Goldberg variation from Glenn Gould's 1955 studio recording. This is very sensitive in lyrical playing, really beautiful in and of itself. I'm now going to segue 3 years ahead to 1959 and the Salzburg Festival, the same music and the same pianist. Live at the 1959 Salzburg Festival. That comes from a complete performance of the Goldberg Variations that he gave at Salzburg. I think perhaps the playing is a little bit warmer and freer and emotionally three-dimensional compared to the studio recording. You know, for all the perfectionism and high standards that Gould brought to his studio recordings, I wonder if D deep down he really knew what his best playing was. Maybe he did, or maybe he didn't. Who knows? And with that, I leave you with selections from the Goldberg Variations recorded live in Moscow in May 1957. Thank you. excerpts from Bach's Goldberg Variations with Glenn Gould at the piano, recorded live in Moscow in May of 1957. One wonders what Gould would make of the music and the communication world now. Given his passion about technology, I know he would have loved digital editing. He would have loved webcasts and social media. Who knows? We really can't answer that with certainty. But one thing I can say with certainty is that Glenn Gould will always be one of classical music's most fascinating figures. This is Jed Distler, artist in residence for the Classical Network, and thank you so much for listening. I hope you will join me again next week at this time. Between the Keys is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org.